Today is Friday, February 20th, 2009. This is Life, the Universe, and Everything, podcasting for writers.
My name is Scott Danielson. We'll go ahead and get started, everybody. My name is Scott Danielson.
Here comes Tracy.
There's Tracy Hickman, the great Tracy Hickman.
I've got my coat.
All right, my name is Scott Danielson, and I'm the moderator of this panel. I will try to moderate, although I know I have no hope. So, the reason that I'm here is I'm the co-founder of a website called sffaudio.com, news, reviews, and commentary on science fiction and fantasy audio. Ding! Okay, so I've been covering the world of audiobooks and podcasting and any kind of audio that has anything to do with science fiction and fantasy for about 10 years now. And with that, let's go ahead and get some introductions. We'll start down there on the far right.
I'm Bob Defendi. I have playtesting.net. It is a, right now I'm running a podcast audiobook there called Death by Cliché. The last episode probably comes out Monday. And then we'll start something new. But anyway, that's why.
I have heard good things about
it. Have you? Good. I need to get a chapter quote from you. I'm thinking about something like, this is the greatest book ever. Hey, wait, you signed this check, Carlin Ellison.
You need to put up on the side, Jeff, like they say, a list of all the episodes so we can get to them
easily. Yeah, I know.
Because I've tried to find the first one and I couldn't find it.
Okay.
So,
I'll do that.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, Jordan. I'm Jordan Sanderson, and I'm the producer for Writing Excuses.
I'm Howard, Brandon, and Dan.
So I wouldn't talk.
Bring us a shrubbery.
The three of us podcast at writingexcuses.com, and because there's three of us here, only one of us is allowed to answer each question.
Yeah, we don't want the whole panel to just be, oh, I just broke it.
I write and illustrate Schlock Mercenary. I am a professional cartoonist. And I love the sound of my own voice.
Brandon Sanderson, I'm the director of Writing Excuses.
I knew that Jordan was the producer, but... I didn't know you got a title.
I'm Dan Wells. I'm the hegemon of writing.
You can be the butman.
I am the bailiff of writing. I'm also the beagle.
I think that's enough.
I'm Tracy Hickman. I'm the whipping boy of writing. I'm also the co-host of Dragonhearth, Voyages into the Realm of Possibilities, and we do a lot of writing work as well. In Dragonheart, which you can find at dragonheartproductions.com, or you can go to Farpoint Media and find us there as well. We also have been doing a Killer Breakfast video podcast.
Oh, have you? I missed that.
Oh yeah, killerbreakfast.com. It's video podcast of Killer Breakfast. When we were doing Phantoms of the Ravenloft at Killer Breakfast. And actually, it's an important episode because that year was the 20th anniversary of Gen Con. It was the 20th anniversary of Gen Con, and Gary Gygax played in our game, in our Killer Breakfast game that year. It was about 5 months before he passed away. So it's pretty exciting.
Did you say killerbreakfast.com?
Killerbreakfast.com. We produced a audio book called The Immortals from my book, The Immortals, that's available on audible.com.
Is it on audio books as well, or is it?
It was on Podio Books, Audible's carrying it now. I don't know if it's still on Podio Books or not. And we had a it was a great time producing that. That was a really enjoyable time.
Well, I am the fastest on the Dragon Heart. Actually, I'm kind of honored to be up here with all of you guys. My experience with podcasting is much less. I take direction from this man. I mean, I
read this, honey.
Yeah. I am the diva of Dragon
Heart. Actually, you've been contemplating producing your own show, though. Yeah. As soon as she knows what that is, she'll back
up. Fantastic. Okay, well, this is called Podcasting for Writers, which can kind of be taken from two ways. You know, people who are interested in listening to podcasts about writing, and then the way that writers actually use podcasting. So let's just start, first of all, with podcasting about writing and writers. You know better than writing excuses, for certain. When did you guys start up, and what gave you the desire to do so?
Jordo, go ahead.
I was in a class at UBU taught by Mike Harper that was all about podcasting. If you want to learn how to do it, that's one of the best classes you can take. We had come up with our own podcast, and me and Dan were making kind of a serial one where it's just funny, just short, like 5 to 10 minute long jokes. Old radio serials. And I just had to listen to a bunch of podcasts to get this idea what was going on. And I just kept on listening to these things and realizing these are great marketing. You know, you get your name out there, but a lot of people just do crap. And so I went to Brandon and I said, this is really good. You should get together with this guy, Howard, you know, who Brandon knew, but I had never met. I only heard about him in stories. And Brandon was like, yeah, let's go with this.
Yeah, I'd listened to a number of podcasts before on writing or by writers and things like this, and had really enjoyed sections of them, but they all seemed to have the same problem, which was droning on and on and on and on and on. And it felt like, you know, sometimes I like that. I like listening to the podcast of just people hanging out and enjoying themselves, but I saw a hole in the market for a short, fast-paced writing podcast where as soon as we ran out of stuff to talk about, it was over. Or right before we ran out of stuff to talk about, it was
I can't
over.
Tell you how common it is to listen to a podcast, and they'll say, we're going to talk about these five subjects, and you can get done with the five subjects in 10 minutes, and then they just sit there for 40 minutes trying to come up with things to talk about. And that's just not what you want to do.
Or they spiral out of control of the first subject.
Yeah, yeah. And it'll be like a half hour to
talk about their
one.
Cat. So, for a half hour.
But yeah. Some of that can be really fun. All I'm saying is, what I'm looking at is, I identified a hole in the market and said, let's try this. So that's where it came from.
I came up with the tagline.
He did. I came up with the title.
Yes, you did.
And Dan, what did you come up with?
I'm not going to talk because we promised only one.
We just brought him in with a look.
I am pretty fake. Yes. I'm the Yankee Mitchum player.
Now, you were an early adopter of podcasting, would you say so?
Oh, yes, I was.
Way, way back at the beginning of computers.
Just after the steam age.
We were at a convention, and Mike Stackpole came up to us and said, you've got to get into podcasting. And we went, Because nobody had heard of it at that point, but Mike had.
I knew about pod people, but I hadn't known about podcasting. I thought it had something to do with fishing and peas. But as it turns out, at least my daughter started doing some podcasting. And she was doing a little podcast of her own, and she said, Dad, you got to get into podcasting. Well, okay, Mike says I got to get into podcasting, you got to get into podcasting. So we got into podcasting. As it turns out, I really love it. Especially, I love audio podcasting, because let's face it, it's cheap, and it's easy to get into, and with a little bit of effort, and I think everybody needs to put in a little more effort that's out there, you can produce something that really has great sound and a lot of space in the sound and really fires the imagination with what's going on.
And we actually migrated our newsletter audience, for the most part, to the podcast, and it took us 2 years to cut off the newsletter. And we went straight podcasting. That's been a much better experience, too.
Yeah.
And the audio podcast in your underwear.
Yeah, exactly.
It sounds like they should
paste
that, though.
I didn't need that image.
There's such great tools right now for podcasting. And with the use of a few tools, you can really turn yourself into something cool-looking, you know, in your basement. It's phenomenal. I did a series of interviews with Richard Garriott from Star City, Russia, and I did it using Skype. And I tell him, you got to get Skype. Okay, you got Skype. After he got Skype, actually, he started using it for his business too. I mean, this is cool. Let's do this. But you can do digital interviews around the world through the internet on Skype. Get great quality sound, and it doesn't cost you anything to do. And so interviews in Russia, no problem. You can do it and put it in the podcast. There's just some fabulous tools that are out there.
Yeah, that interview sounded great too.
Oh, did? Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounded much better than the Web Comics Weekly guys.
How about you, Bob? How did you get started?
Howard
Maitland.
Well, actually, I have a book that I was starting to decide was unsellable because everybody who read it said, this is really funny and I loved it a lot, but nobody else will like it.
I've written a lot of those.
But everybody who read it thought that, but they all thought that it was all in-jokes that only they would get. So Howard had read the book, and Howard said, well, you should start putting out as a podcast audiobook, because that's Howard's business model. And so I started doing that, and it worked out really well.
I understand that. The idea that I should, you know, tell Bob to read his own book to people grew out of the fact that I was playing in a game that Bob was GMing, and by virtue of the fact that Bob is damn loud,
I am,
and that I say that because that's canon, not because I wanted to use an expletive. Bob is just big of voice, and. Okay, so big period, but that doesn't come across in audio. He's got an enormous voice, and I knew that if Bob told these jokes, they'd be funnier. Because when I was reading the manuscript, I was reading them and imagining Bob telling me the jokes. And it was so much better for me. And I said, Bob, you got to read it yourself. And I had been told, not Tracy, I don't know if this is true or not, but I had been told that there's a certain stigma among audiophile, book-o-tape people that you don't read your own book. You have somebody else read your book. You don't read your own book for an audiobook. But for Bob's book, he had the voice for it. And so, yeah, I made him do it. And I don't regret it because it's been some of the funniest stuff I've ever listened to.
Yeah,
Playtesting.net.
That's great. Yeah, as far as the stigma about authors reading their own books, there are a lot of people who don't enjoy that, but they're always accepted. Like Neil Gaiman, I recommend him to anyone as a narrator. Harlan Ellison is a great narrator.
Oh, yeah, yes.
He's even narrated things that aren't his, Wizard of Earth stuff. Nobody else is popping in my head now, but those are a couple.
Scott Sigler made his career,
yeah,
starting by, yeah, writing his own books.
Right, and that's kind of what I wanted to get in next, is how do writers themselves use podcasting? And the Tracy podcast about all the Immortals, like you were saying, would you mind telling what the Immortals is about?
The Immortals actually came from an idea my wife had, and she didn't want to write it, so she gave it to me.
It was so dark, I didn't want to deal with it. I took him to breakfast one morning and told him about it, and then I felt like the burden was off me.
Yeah, on me. The Immortals is a future dark history book. That is, the easiest way to explain it would be that it's about AIDS concentration camps in southern Utah, in West Beaver County. And these concentration camps, as it turns out in the book here, I give so much away, it turns out that they're actually extermination camps. They're built specifically to burn. And there are 12 camps out in the Wawa Valley, and every 12-month rotation, they blow another one to the ground using an FAC. And then, not a family woman.
That was crazy.
And then they go to the top of it.
nuclear explosive and blow up the ground. And then in Milford, they built another camp out of plywood and hauled it out there and just set it back up, and no one would know be the wiser for it. It was a book about acceptance. It was a book about mortality. It was a book about being remembered after one left the world, after one died. And for me, a very strong book. It said a great deal, I think, about people.
The book had gone out of print, and the print rights returned to us. And so we kept saying, what are we going to do with this? And Tracy had a brilliant idea. He said, let's do an audiobook.
Let's just do an audiobook. And so I had done a lot of audio production, audio and video production in my younger life. And I had a lot of experience in audio production. I got some needle drops. I got Laura to read some of the pieces. She did the intros and outros and a sound effects library, and we just produced the heck out of it. I really wanted the sound of being there to be part of the show. We did the entire thing in my office. It was all just done digitally in my office, and turned out to be a really great sound. It actually revitalized the book. The book went back into print after the audio book went out, and now it's been picked up by Audible, so that people can buy it now, I think, through iTunes.
And that's an interesting thing to note. Podcasts, for those of you who don't normally listen, they're free episodic radio that you download and listen to, right?
Or just play through your browser,
yeah. Right. But he was giving away the Immortals for free. Scott Sigler is another person who did that. He hadn't written a book before. I think it was Infected was his first one. Anyway, he podcast his novel for free. Became very popular as a podcast. Now he's got a contract with Random House, and they published the book.
Yeah, Earth Core was his first podcast audio book, and right. He had 10,000 listeners by the end of it.
I think this is actually something interesting about this is it's reverberating through the entire publishing industry a little bit. I've noticed through, partially because of podcasting audiobooks, partially because of the explosion of digital audio media, audio rights for science fiction and fantasy books have exploded over the last year, specifically fantasy. It used to be very hard to sell a fantasy audiobook because they would be so long and so big that the prices were just enormous, and they would have, you know, you'd have to buy the 30 disc sets, and so you had to be, well, you know, Tracy Hickman level to be selling this, or you had to be really big, and most of the mid-listers were not selling. Well, because of the audio revolution and the digital revolution, a lot of these things are selling. Suddenly, they're getting snatched up all over the place, and you can only buy them as a download. They don't appear in stores, but that's becoming the preferred way to get audiobooks because of a lot of these things. And I think it's actually the podcast and audiobooks that started a lot of this.
Yeah, and I think you're right. Yeah, the downloading has become an awful convenient way, but it's also much cheaper. The audiobook industry has been climbing at about 3-4% every year for several years, while the publishing industry has been flat. And then also the prices of the audiobooks themselves, as more and more people buy them, the price is going down. They used to be $60. You go into Barnes & Noble and you find a
$60. There were some for $100. Right. You want to buy a Robert Jordan book, you got to drop $90.
They were huge. But now it's not the case. You can go to audible.com and get it now. And I noticed we got a launcher stand, and we also got the first Dragon Ships one year. Is that a Tor?
It's Tor.
Tor, okay. So from Macmillan Audio. And then I noticed Macmillan is doing a lot of audiobooks now that never show up at all in hard copy. Those are all showing up, published by Macmillan Audio, but on audible.com.
The Mistborn novels are all showing up there, but you can't buy CD versions of them, or maybe you can somewhere, but they're not appearing in stores.
The last time I looked...
You can download and burn them onto a CD.
Yeah, you sure can.
Yeah, saves a lot of money.
Yeah, the last time I looked, they had Mistborn 1 and 3.
Yeah, they did 1 and 3. They didn't do the middle one yet. They started with 3 because it was the most recently released.
Yeah.
It was current. It was on the Times list. Let's release that. And then everyone wrote me and said, well, you can't release number three without number one on audio. And so then they went back to number one, but now they don't have the second one. So eventually, Bob would read it for you.
I
won. That would be an experience.
Okay, well, let's talk about benefits. Okay, you're giving this stuff away for free. You're putting in the effort. You're giving this stuff away for free. What do you guys get back on?
Well, what I have gotten out of podcasting is an audience. I mean, I don't even have a book out yet. My book doesn't come out for 3 weeks. And yet, many of you are wearing my pin. Many of you have come up and said that you know me from the podcast. I am building a fan base before I even have a product to sell. And the podcast is why I have that. And so I'm hoping if you all go out and actually buy the book, that that will translate into a fabulous career.
There are people who have discovered my work as a result of being fans of Brandon Sanderson, who listened to the podcast and then thought, oh, that Howard Taylor guy, he's actually funny sometimes, and he's a cartoon. And it's free on the internet? Okay, they go and read it. And I've had people at Dragon's Keep, the comic book store where I do all my penciling and inking. I was carrying on a conversation with somebody, and some random customer walked over to me and said, I know your voice. You're the 15 minutes long guy. Yes, I am, because you're in a hurry.
We're not that smart.
It's really great for marketing. As Dan has said, it's really great for getting your name out there. Because if people are interested, you just have to make sure that you're out on all the podcast aggregators. So iTunes, Yahoo has some. There's like 20 or 30, and, well, there's a lot of services that they're free to put up on there. And people search for writing, and it comes up, and they see these names, and then those names, hopefully, if Dan says, Howard's seen some, equate to more readers or more sales.
Sure. Howard also gets readers on the fact that whenever I stand in as a supervisor at work, there's a rule that you have to read 10 Schlock Mercenary comics before you can go on break.
This is why I love Bob.
How about you, Bob? Have you noticed it? Have you gotten any benefit out of it?
Well, you know, I've been, you know, doing the game design thing for a long time. That's a really small niche market.
Sure.
And, you know, I, in my wildest dreams, I had the amount of, you know, customers for my game company that I had on my first week of podcasting, because Howard blogged about it. Mm-hmm. But that first week, bam, you know, I'm all of a sudden 3 digits on listeners, and I'm just like, 3 digits where the people know my name all of a sudden. That's really strange.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And then you mentioned that it revived the Immortals for you.
Yeah, it revived that book. And we have to look at new ways of marketing things. The old ways of marketing things don't work. Not too long ago, I went out on a book tour and discovered that, well, that used to be the model, to go to the bookstore and to meet people and to encourage people to buy the books. People don't go to bookstores anymore. They buy their books at Amazon. They buy their books online. And people don't hang around the bookstores the way they used to, and there's not a return clientele that is always coming back to the bookstore.
Yeah.
And like they used to. And so as a consequence, we go on these inordinately expensive book tours, and 20 people show up. Because 20 people found out they were there. I take that back. 50 people would show up. 30 of them would be there because they heard I would be there on the podcast.
Yeah. Book tours have changed a lot, book signings. And when people show up at my book signings, it's because I told them, generally.
Yeah.
Through either my website or my podcast, and that brings a lot of people there. But in that case, the book tour, the book signing has turned into something you do for your readers rather than something you do to get new readers.
Yes.
And so that's a very different way of looking at it.
In this light, though, I think it's important to point out that the podcast is a piece of this new marketing that you're describing, Tracy. Yes. It is just a piece. You can't be thinking if you build it, they will come. The podcast is part of an overarching strategy. You know, Bob's podcast is, frankly, it is brilliant and wonderful, and you will feel rewarded for having listened to it. But you would not have listened to it if one of us hadn't told you about it. You know, Bob got 1,000 listeners because I blogged about it in front of 40,000 people. And Bob and I networking is part of, you know, Mercenary Bob's marketing strategy, and we could talk about marketing in that vein for hours and hours and hours.
We did a podcast on that.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. And you
that's
should listen to
it. That's writingexcuses.com. That's great. Well, should we discuss nuts and bolts real quick and then open for questions?
That's nuts and bolts from a good idea.
Okay, Jordan?
Jordo's got nuts and bolts.
What do you need? You want to start a podcast? What have you got to have?
You need a computer and a microphone.
Easy.
That was such a high flyer.
Yeah, sorry.
I don't use the preamp at all. I don't preamp it.
So they want to start a podcast. What would you tell them to do?
I would say, well, you're going to need hosting because you need a place to put it. There are some places out there that will host your podcast for free. They'll do all the work for you. If you have, or you can go through what we use WordPress, and we use a plugin called PodPress that does all the work for us. It's great. Mm. It even shows you what it will look like when you're in iTunes and stuff like that, so you can make sure that people are navigating through the iTunes interface, that the information that you're writing up shows the way you want it to do. Hardware-wise, all you really need is a PC or a Mac and a mic. They all come with recording equipment. I mean, ways to record. There's some really good... I don't think it's open source, but there's some freeware on the PC end.
What's it called?
Audacity. And that's really good. I know a lot of people that use that. On the Mac, I know a lot of people use GarageBand to do it, and I think that's something cheap that you can get on the Mac. I don't know if there's anything free on that end. But you really just need a mic. I don't preamp, but we do use a mixer because we're using a bunch of lines in. But if you have three people over, you can just use three USB mics if you want and just do it that way.
Do you have a preferred microphone?
Not really. You don't need to spend a lot of money on your equipment. We got some lapel mics that are about $35 each, and then we've got a stand mic that costs $20. But the mixers themselves are expensive. You're going to pay $200 for a mixer with just allows for two mics, and it's about $100 for each additional mic you want to add to the mixer. And so if you really want to get in there in a mixer to be able to adjust the audio levels and stuff, that's where it gets expensive.
Does the mixer
don't
have
need
USB
one.
Inputs on it? And USB out, or
there are a lot of them are FireWire, but they do have USB ones.
Okay.
Ours is actually analog, so we don't even have the option of the USB. And the reason why the USB ones are nice, because then if you're recording in something, I don't know if Audacity will do it, but I use Sony Vegas, which is a really high-end product. They'll put each mic on its own track, and then you could mix mic levels inside the actual audio editing software. But we don't have that luxury, so that's why sometimes your levels
are off. We have huge software and terrible, well, not terrible, but basic equipment.
We have basic equipment and really, really expensive software. That's how I roll.
Moment of confession here. Moment of confession here. You know, I studied audio engineering in school, but when I was in school, there was no podcasting, the MP3 format.
There wasn't even the internet when you were in school.
There was not World Wide Web. The World Wide Web was invented the year I graduated. And so podcasting was foreign to me. When Giordo started setting up the microphones, though, I looked at microphone placement and I realized one of the rules that I learned in audio engineering is you ask 10 audio engineers where to put the mics, you will get the mics in 10 different places. And I looked at what Giordo was doing and thought, Jordan, you're doing that wrong, but I don't want to have to do it, so I'm going to shut up. I don't like our mixer, I don't like our mics, but you know what? I'm only telling you this so that you understand if you've got the luxury of an engineer who's going to do this stuff for you, let him do it and shut up.
I'll say one of the reasons why you don't need expensive equipment is because you're doing this audio on the web. You're compressing the heck out of it anyway. You're going to be probably recording at a really high bit rate and then saving it down to 96, which is like radio quality.
Yeah, we're 96K mono, aren't we?
No, we're stereo. Oh, no, yeah, we're stereo because I'm too lazy to switch to mono. But, yeah, I mean...
Yeah, let's go ahead and get this question.
Audacity is available on the Mac.
Okay, cool. Right. But, yeah, but so you don't need to buy a $100 mic because your quality is going to be exactly the same when it's just for voices.
A $100 mic is a cheap mic. Just so you know,
you can get some really nice ones for around $20 or $30 to do what you want to do. And this is coming from... Tracy's angry. This is coming from audio engineering department at UVU. And that's basically, I bought some of the mics that these guys said, these are going to be perfect for what you want to do, because anything else is overkill.
Jane, you ignorant slut.
No, that's Tracy. That's Tracy saying, Jordan, you're wrong and Howard's right.
I'm going to defer to the guys that I know that do this stuff for a living and make money off of it.
What do you compress down to, Tracy?
I'm in a P3 format, but I'm CD audio sound. I just figured that if they don't have the bandwidth, it's their problem. I don't have to have any complaints yet. I think that's okay. I mean, if that's the sound that you're looking for, I think that the issue is not whether you're. Whether you can get your sound out, it's a question of whether anybody's listening to you.
Right.
And if people are listening to you, then whatever sound that is the sound you need to have.
He bought me a Rhodes mic for Mother's Day.
Wasn't that sweet?
there's an excellent
Rhodes mic that is supposed to be a camera mic. It's a shotgun. A shotgun camera mic, supposed to be like a shoe-mounted camera mic. It's for like $60, but it has an awesome sound response. And it's just a stereo mini plug. So I just mounted it on a little tripod on my desk, and that works really well.
And really, the size of your files are going to matter more to you for your hosting, your bandwidth, than to your listeners. I've never noticed how long it takes me to download Tracy's podcast because. Up with my iTunes and checks and the downloads. And
that's right. You can go to lunch and come back.
And I'll be like, why is my computer a little slow on downloading something? You know.
But I'm going to take another side on this a little bit in saying that there are a lot of people out there who are sitting in front of a microphone and think it's a podcast.
That's true.
And because there are so many of them out there who just think that you really want to listen to them rattle on about whatever. That it all becomes noise. I think that if you're going to be heard, you need a sound that is beyond the noise. And I think that does take a little bit more work and a little bit more effort. So from my end of the table, which is kind of other side of the spectrum, I think you do need good editing software. I use Adobe. It's not Encore. Encore is my DVD editing offering.
Know the program.
I can't think of the name.
If it springs into my head, we'll come up with it. I use the Adobe. SoundBooth is not the program that you want. SoundBooth is for video AV editing. It's their actual program that they use for audio. But Vegas is the same. It's pretty much the same sort of thing. I like to multitrack. I like to layer sound in multitrack. You can go online and hire an announcer. I can't think of that either. But you can go online, and there are websites where you can listen to voice talent.
Put it in liner notes.
We'll put it in liner notes. in the liner notes, which is what we did. We actually went online and we found a woman, Samantha, who's from New Zealand. She had the kind of Kiwi sound that we really wanted in terms of our announcer voice.
She's great.
She cut a wonderful suite, audio suite for us. A great woman. It was a couple of $200, I think. And it was an easy gig for her to do. But it gave us, it allowed us to do our breaks and our openings and our end piece to sound really solid and pro. Music,
I am a digital juice junkie. Go to digitaljuice.com. You can get music at Digital Juice, but you can also get incredible sound effects suites at Digital Juice. And wait until they have a sale. And they're always having a sale. It's like, wow, there's a car dealership with a sale. Surprise. Every week they have some different special at Digital Juice. And anytime, and if you don't like what they've got, wait till next week and they'll have something else on sale.
And you can find a lot of good sound effects just on Creative Commons stuff.
Yeah.
Make sure to get royalty-free stuff.
Yeah, get royalty-free stuff. Digital Juice is that way. You purchase the license when you buy the suite. And you can produce a fabulous sound that way by using these tools. If there's one thing I would say to you is that you need to produce a unique sound, something that is distinctive, and that sounds professional. Today it is not that difficult to come up with a professional sound.
One caution:
If you make that effort, it will immediately set you above about 98% of what's out there now.
Yeah. One caution that I'd offer, and this is advice from my audio engineering days 20 years ago: the speakers that you listen to when you're listening, you know, playing back your podcast, you may listen to that, and those speakers may have a really big audio, acoustic space that they can create for you. You might have really good speakers attached to your PC or, you know, whatever it is you're doing, you're listening on. But a lot of people will listen to podcasts in their car.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And those speakers are some of the worst speakers known to man, not because the speakers themselves are crummy, but because the housing is a giant metal box that's roaring down the freeway at 70 miles an hour. Okay? Now, what does this translate into? I was listening to a Mike Stackpole podcast on writing. Mike Stackpole has a wonderful baritone voice. I love listening to the man speak. His podcast was excellently produced. There was a little faint strain of background music running under it, and that background music, when added to the noise of my car, meant that his podcast was unlistenable after about 15 minutes. It gave me a headache. I listened to it at home, it sounded great. These kinds of mistakes you are not going to catch unless you do what good audio engineers do and you listen to it in your studio and then you burn it to CD or whatever, iPod, take it and put it in your car, put it on a, you know, dinky little boombox and listen to it in two or three places, and then as you're creating this sound Tracy's telling you about, you'll realize, oh wait, I can't do that, or I'm going to shoo away the low end of my market.
Also remember that they're going to be, if you've got a big audience, there's going to be a lot of mothers of five who have one earplug in listening to you while they're watching their kids, so they have the other earplug out. So make sure that your podcast listens okay to those conditions. I actually want my editor for my game company's wife rebelled against doing it in stereo for my podcast because she said, I can't listen to an audiobook in stereo. It's just impossible.
That's why I've been against us doing the where I'm writing excuses having Brandon in the center and Dan on one side and Howard on the other because, well, if you're only listening to on one headphone, you're going to barely hear one of the other guys.
Yeah. Well, depending on which guy that is, then...
As long as it's Howard, we're fine.
But, you know, this would be really kind of cool now to think about it because, you know, one of you can take one position, the other can take another position. And, you know, very much like modern media, you just take out whichever ear you disagree with.
My characters, Howard has nothing important to say.
And while we're talking about books actually having been published, Dan has...
All right. Okay. Is there any questions? We've got about 7 minutes left. Does anybody have questions?
With regard to fantasy and science fiction books, audio rights being more important to the publishers now, I've heard from some people, you know, saying essentially that if you podcast your novel, you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot with regard to audio rights that the publishers want and that they aren't necessarily, they don't want you to have already podcasted your novel.
I would say on that,
What's the balance? What's the value? They're selling for, you know, they're actually selling, which is good, but you're still not making, not people aren't banging down your doors and paying you 100,000 grand for audio rights. You're probably getting a couple thousand, maybe five, maybe 10,000 if you're lucky in most cases, would be my guess for books that
if
are...
If you don't have a contract yet, if you're unsigned and you've got this book and it's actually worth reading, the audio rights are currently worth nothing.
Well, your agent will disagree with
your
that.
Your agent, if you don't have an agent, right. I mean, if you're in a position where nobody's reading this.
I interpret the question as, you've got this book that, I mean, the potential in many cases for a new author, if you can do it right, the potential for increased audience, I would say, is worth the payoff on the end, but it's going to be a personal decision. But, you know, that's my opinion. I believe in, I gave away a free book on my website before it's even out. I believe in the power of giving away things for free in order to generate a larger audience who will then be with you in the long run. If you plan to be someone who writes one mega bestseller and that you earn royalties on that for the rest of your life, then good luck to you. Don't do your audiobook that way. Don't give it away for free because you've only got one thing. I plan to do this for the rest of my life and be releasing one or two books a year for the rest of my life. You know what? I can take one and give it away for free if that generates me an extra 10,000 people who will then buy my books later on and then, you know, generate more word of mouth and these sorts of things. But it is a trade-off. Maybe that's a better question for Bob, because you're doing that.
Well, as I said, I had come to the conclusion that my book was probably unsellable because I couldn't convince anybody that there was an audience for it. I've proven there's an audience for it now. And I did it at the sacrifice of the audio rights. I don't know if I'll sell the book later or if I'll, you know, even try or just go straight into doing other stuff. But, you know, proving writers, building up an audience to be able to say in letters that I've got, you know...
You have a measure of name recognition now that you did not have prior to podcasting that. And so this was a marketing exercise. And, you know, building that kind of name recognition, if you go to a marketing firm and say, I want to build this, what will you charge me? They're probably going to charge you a lot more than those audio rights ever would have been worth.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'd like to also point out that something that we talk about in publishing, which is the original bad deal. Your first book is not going to sell for $1 million.
Right.
It's going to be a bad deal. It's going to be for very low money and lousy royalties, and basically they're going to go out and make a lot of money off of your name.
Yeah, Dan.
Yeah,
Dan. Yeah. Tell us about how bad
your
Germany deal was.
Yeah. So that wasn't my first deal.
I am so glad I brought this up. The point of that is that if you're giving away that first book, that's just part of the original bad deal. And you just chalk it up to that. This is where you get an audience. Look how well it worked for Scott Simpler.
Oh, yeah.
Now he has an audience, and now he's going to do another book. He'll sell it.
He hit the New York Times bestseller list with last
month. Exactly.
And I'd like to mention one other person, James Patrick Kelly, who's an excellent short story writer. He started a podcast, his fiction, online, and he credits that for his Hugo for.
Now, let's just point out something that Tracy said when he was podcasting with us last panel was...
Which you should listen to.
The concept was, there is no silver bullet. This is not a silver bullet. Podcasting is, you know, it's not going to be for everyone. Number one, you need to have the voice that'll make it work. Otherwise, you'll need to have someone else read it for you. You need to be able to do that. Be listenable. You don't have to be
a
professional
announcer. You have to have an determination to probably read the same sentence 10 times until you read it.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you need to be able.
You have to be able to read it in chunks.
Yeah.
Because when I can't act a shouted scene without shouting it. But the attribution is a completely different level of volume than the shouted line. So I had a whole bit I listened to last night was an argument between two people across a fight scene where they're shouting at each other. And, you know, every piece of dialogue was shouted, and then we'd pause, change the levels, and I'd give the attribution and the descriptions of the action, and go to the next line, change the levels, I'd shout it, you know, and that was an annoying session.
It's not going to be for everyone. It could work for you. It's another tool you can use. Don't go from this panel and say, oh, I have to do this. Use it. Take it and say, you know, this is another option. It might be right for me. It could work for you.
Part of the marketing arsenal.
We have a question over here. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. What about people who've been putting up their novels and have their little, like, PayPal thing
That's actually how Escape Pod's been run. I don't know if that's finally.
Okay, I'm not making money podcasting with a donation button, but my model. I mean, I put up desktop backgrounds 1 month, and made $600 or $700, and then I did a little coloring book, the Stroll Munitions Plasma Cannon Safety Activity Book for Children. it was a 26 page black and white PDF coloring book, and I put that online and said, donate any amount of money and I'll send you this PDF. And I made $4,000 in 1 month. Okay? I have one. I have the next one. The next one is A is for Amorph. I have an alphabet book coming. The hard part is that it all needs to rhyme. Carbosilicate is tough. Anyway, regarding donation buttons, for the longest time I did not have a donation button on my site. And I would, and I'm not making this up, I would get email about once a week from somebody who would say, Mr. Taylor, I can't find the donation button. How do I send you money? And I would reply very politely and say, if you're using PayPal, this is the email address you use. Thank you very much for your support. And finally, I said, all right, I'll put a donation button back up. Well, I redesigned the site, and I didn't realize this. The donation button on my monitor was right down here, kind of in the corner, about how I liked my browser sized, and I got a couple of donations a month. I revamped the site a little bit, threw some things in an iframe, and the donation button floated up 100 pixels. I got like $250 in donations over the next week by virtue of the fact that other people's web browsers with slightly smaller windows, they could now see the button. Simple principle of web design. If there's something you want people to click on, they need to be able to see it.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
I just have a question about the internet's a huge place, and so if I, with no value to my name, put out a book that could be awesome, what's gonna draw the people to a free download to a great book if they don't know who you are?
You need to know me. Okay, and I'm joking, but coming to events like this and networking and making things. Bob and I have been friends for 4 or 5 years now.
Something like that.
Where did we meet?
Here.
That's how these things happen. Yeah, legwork.
One other thing, there's a site out there called podiobooks.com, and that's what they do is they put podcast novels on there, so it's a kind of a central place for people to find that kind of book.
It's a community type. Yeah.
Yeah. Take some web marketing
classes. Everything there is driven by, hey, if you like this book, click on here and the author will get 50% out of it. It's all straightforward.
Yeah, it's a good place. It's a good place to start. Yeah. I actually, The Immortals started at Hollywood.
Okay, well, it looks like we're out of time. Any closing remarks?
Yes, I've listened to Podio Books where they read their fan mail. If you do that, I won't listen to you. I hate that. Because it's never the bad stuff. Never the bad stuff. It's always just like the guy going, oh, I'm blushing. Oh, this is so... Just shut up and let me listen. Because there's no benefit that can serve you. Either I agree with these ridiculous fanboys that are emailing in saying this is the best thing they ever heard, in which case you didn't gain anything by reading it to me, or I don't. And I was listening to this audiobook, the Star Wars audiobook, which I really enjoyed, and I'm listening to the feedback at the beginning of the next episode, and everybody's praising the cliffhanger he did in the end of the episode before. And I had liked the cliffhanger until everybody started praising it. And then I started arguing with them. This isn't the best cliffhanger I've ever heard. This is a completely workman-like cliffhanger. Why is everybody praising this cliffhanger? And now I don't like that cliffhanger. It's all because of the praise.
I would say if you're going to be starting your own podcast, before you start it up, just like you outline a book, outline the podcast. Say, this is how long it's going to be. This is what I want to do. This is what the tagline is going to be. This is what the cover art is. And plan all that out for the whole general series itself. Figure out how you're going to name all the episodes. And then when you come in and actually start your first next few episodes, you'll be able to find that.
it'll just be that much easier because you've already decided on all these little small nuts and bolts of it before you actually start deciding on the content that will go in that first
That's
episode.
That's good.
Yeah, practice your intros and your outros. Quick show of hands, how many of you have recorded a voicemail message before, the answering machine message? Any of you ever done that? Okay, now, show of hands again, how many of you rehearsed that message before you pressed 1 in order to record? Did you rehearse it? Okay, that thing you did, do it for the intro and outro of your podcast. The fact that Brandon and Dan and I can mess with our opening format grows out of the fact that it's a pattern that we've kind of memorized. 15 minutes long because you're in a hurry.
And we're not that smart. I'm like a monkey.
I say,
I'm gonna
pimp.
Warbreaker,
free download on my website, BrandonSanderson.com. Got a signing tomorrow in the bookstore, noon.
I don't have very many left, but we have business cards for writing excuses if you want to come and grab one. Also, I have a reading tomorrow at 2 o'clock.
Oh, we will have writing excuses CDs here tomorrow if you want to listen to the first season of Writing Excuses and drop $10.
CD also has one of my books on it.
Or you can go to playtesting.net and listen for free.
Come join us on the Dragon Hearth. You can find us on iTunes or at the Dragon Hearth Productions website. You can listen to the episodes there as well.
And for all kinds of news on Science Fiction Fantasy Audio, this is what we do on that site, is talk about all this kind of stuff. SFFAudio.com. Thanks, everybody.